The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Preparing the Ruins, the 2015 Annual Conference Recordings, copyright 2015. If you have purchased this recording, you may make additional copies for use by your school. You may not sell copies of the recording, nor post it on the internet. Learn more about classical Christian education and ACCS at www.accsedu.org.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, after listening to John Mark Reynolds and then having the moderator say, you know, wow, that's a tough act to follow, I really felt great that I was the act to follow. As a way of introduction, my name is Ron Young. I'm headmaster at Providence Academy in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Go Pack! Yeah, Seattle. Where was I? I got on the Packers here. But, so I've been a headmaster. I'm going on my fourth year, entering my fourth year as headmaster there. Before I became headmaster, I taught for 2 years at Providence as a bivocational minister. I was working on a church plant that sadly did not quite work out the way we hoped. In God's providence, we shut the doors at Christmas, and in May, the board asked me to be the headmaster of Providence Academy. It's been truly a blessing. You might be I'm going to wait for a few more people coming in here. So I should tell a story. Providence Academy was a charter member of the ACCS. It was founded in 1993. We're very proud of that fact. It was a K-12 school originally, back around 2000, due to a rift with our parents and our leaders. There was a big drop-off in attendance, and the high school aspect was dropped. So we stayed kindergarten through eighth grade up until just a few years ago. And when I was in my interview with the board, they asked me about my willingness to come on board. I said I would if on the one condition they let me start a high school. And they were so thrilled to hear that because that was the same thing they wanted. My background, besides being a pastor, is that for many years I taught homeschooled kids in the rhetoric level, great books, humanities, a little bit of Latin, a little bit of Greek, a little bit of logic. And I had the opportunity of really seeing what high school kids were capable of and to see what they... To see them engage in life, in conversation, and the delight in knowing and understanding, not just subjects, but making the connections between what they've been reading and real life. To have conversations around my own dinner table with my own homeschooled son about a movie that he saw and how it related to a plot in a Shakespearean play that he had seen. And us discussing those, and it drifting into theology and politics, and it's phenomenal. I was telling a story earlier to, I don't know where he's at right now, but Jason was in here. My wife and I were one day sitting at our in our couches on Wednesday night. My oldest son had headed off to youth group, and he had been invited to be a part of a worship team at a youth group that was not our church. And several of the kids that I had tutored were part of that youth group. And it is Wednesday night, close to 9 o'clock, and we see this steady stream of cars coming down our street. And all these high school kids piling out of their vehicles and coming into my front room. And my son and a few of the other kids who, again, I had been tutoring, had gotten into a discussion at youth group, and they'd been questioning the youth pastor about something that he had said. Eventually, the youth pastor had to get away from the conversation, but it continued. Soon they had to kick the kids out of the church because they needed the clothes. And so my son and these other two boys come into my front room to ask me a question because they got stuck. Meanwhile, there's about a half a dozen other high school students who just plopped down on the floor. I don't remember what the question was exactly, but I do remember referencing Augustine. And my son took that and began to talk again to his other two friends. And they just discussed all these things. And high school kids drove all the way from church to my house, sat on my floor so they can continue to watch these other kids discuss and debate this fabulous thing. Of course, my wife always looks at me and shakes her head when these things happen because she sees my so proud of this. It's amazing. I wish I would have taken filmed these occasions because it has happened more than once, so that I could use that as a tool to show parents, like, look, this is what it can be. This is what it can be. So I came into Providence Academy as they asked me to be the headmaster with that goal in mind, and the board was very excited that that's what I had in mind. I received, and you may have, back in 2013, the publication ACCS put out. It was a survey to schools who had started high school and asked them what were their main problems, what were their successes, the hurdles, and they put the results of the survey together in a brochure or a paper entitled Entering the Rhetoric Stage. You can still go on the ACCS website and get it. I trust that you've done that. In the introduction, you write, several schools within ACCS, while committed to providing the whole trivium, grammar stage through the rhetoric stage, have hit a brick wall in growing beyond the eighth grade. Now, I've entitled my talk, Crashing Through the Brick Wall, because in reality, that's what we've done. I wish I could come up with something more, I don't know, biblical. Repairing the ruins sounds great. You know, I remember Chuck Swindoll had that book about Nehemiah, Hand Me Another Brick. Doesn't that sound great? But in all reality, this is what we did. We crashed through the brick wall. So here was my strategy, and then I'm going to get on with the talk itself. My strategy was simply this. I was going to find some parents willing to be guinea pigs. And as soon as I found those parents, we're just going to go for it. And that's the whole strategy. Now, go and do likewise. I'm here to talk about my experience of how we've been doing this. I don't come as an expert, like, this is how you build a high school. I'm simply saying this is a model. This is what we did, and I've kind of looked back at what has been the crucial things about the success of it, and so far it has been a success. What are the main issues? I boiled it down to three. And you'll see this in your outline. Visionary leadership and a supportive board. The second is commitment to vision and excellence. And the third, strategic marketing and development. Now, if you're anything like me coming to the ACCS conference, a lot of times I'm looking for the practical. I want to come in and get, okay, what's a couple things I can do to implement next year? So I'm going to disappoint you in that I put this in the order of what I saw as the most important. I'm going to spend most of my time in the first one, then the second one, and if we get to the third one, we might. And so you're going to be disappointed. Because it's not really about implementing certain things. It's not about what you're doing. Really, I think the key to the success is more about who you are. Both you as an administrator, you as a board member, and the school as a whole. That's the key to success.
The other part about the strategic marketing and development is good. It, like I say, it's one of the three important things I put on here. But if you don't have the first two, I'm sad to say I don't think it's going to work. Make sense? Before I go into it, I want to just ask, how many of you are administrators? Can you raise your hand for me? How many board members? Just a few. I was hoping there would be more board members, because I got a lot to say about board members.
Here, here.
Excellent. So the first part, and I'm guessing that all of you are in that point, you're K-8 and you're wanting to go. How many of you are K-8 right now looking to add? How many of you are currently, or how many of you are less than K-8 perhaps? How many of you are already in the rhetoric stage? Are you guys all working, is the beginning of it, or all the way K-12? How many are K-12 already? All right. Maybe I'll be asking you questions too then. All right. Well, to me, the most important thing has been this relationship between the board and myself. It is the key part. And the way that it has worked for us is that it's having a visionary leader and a board who won't get in my way. Right? That's been the main key for us. When I joined Providence as the administrator, as the headmaster, Providence had gone through a series of internal corrections. When the school broke off the high school aspect, the school struggled mightily. Attendance varied between 40 and 60 students for many years. And the way that it survived was you had some of the families who started the school pitching in. And they, you know, one of the founding families was the chairman of the board. His wife was actually the headmaster, not even getting paid for a while. And one of their sons actually was a teacher. Now, this was great in that it helped us survive, but it's also very unhealthy. And so one of the transitions that had happened was removing the chairman of the board's wife from being headmaster to being a teacher, and then hiring another headmaster. That was my predecessor. This worked out horribly. What eventually happened is there became a rift between some of the founding families and the school. The result was one particular founding family left altogether. Their son also left. And it was both a very sad thing for our school, but also a very good thing in that the board began to function less like a homeschool co-op with one of the dads throwing the check in to make sure that the teachers got paid, and more like a school, more like a business. My predecessor had the great job of seeing that through. He was not a visionary. He was not even really in education. He was a business guy and saw the dysfunction and helped work through it. So I have to say that a lot of our success comes because of Bill Gussie, who was my predecessor and a good friend of mine. It was a lot of pain for him, but I'm so thankful for him. When he left, it was primarily because of money. The founding families were the people that kind of wrote the check at the end of the, whatever is not being met. And Bill did not have a vision. Bill was trying to keep the thing afloat. And going to donors or asking people to be the next sugar daddy didn't work out too well. So in his last year, they had about a $75,000 deficit they had to make up. And the great idea that they had was to get families to pay in advance for the following year with a 10% discount. And then I became headmaster. I should have asked about that before I said yes. The truth of the matter is that it excited me. I liked the challenge, and I really believed. Like I said, I taught 2 years there. I believed in that school, and I believed what we were doing was an amazing thing. I was so convinced that this school needed to thrive and needed to have a high school, I would do anything. I, my first year as headmaster, also had a paper route. And I was working, you know, sometimes 70 to 80 weeks. It was not uncommon. Because it had to succeed. Green Bay needs Providence Academy. The world needs Providence Academy. And I did it. And here's the other thing. The guys on the board, our board is all homeschool, or is all dads of students. That's kind of how they wrote it. And these men were so supportive of me. It was an amazing thing. And it came in all sorts of different ways. Taking me out to lunch, dinner, you and your wife need to go on a date. You name it. I had one board member who offered to take my paper out for a couple days so I can have a rest. It was fantastic. I knew it was temporary, and so I could do it. You know, if you know something's temporary, you could put up with about anything. So I was convinced that this needed to it. I was committed. I was all into it. And in a way, I really felt that this is where God had called me. He had called me there. And the thing about needing to be convinced and called is it's on your shoulder. It's on your shoulders, really, to convince other people. I mean, really, it's a crazy idea. Going up to people and saying, we're going to start a high school and that we've not had in over 10 years. And I know that we're $75,000 in the hole starting off this school year, but next year it's going to be fine. We're going to start this thing. And for a parent to say, yeah, I'll pay the tuition for something that is not in place yet. Isn't that crazy? But I was convinced that this ought to happen, and I was convinced that it was doable. And meeting with donors. Our school was small, but it was producing amazing students. You know, I went to my first donor and asked him to give me some money. And I almost said it that way because I'm naive. I was a pastor, you know. You give, pass the plates, you know. And so I'm meeting with a donor, a potential donor, and you know, well, tell me about your school. Tell me about your vision. Tell me about your alumni. Alumni. Oh. I'm not sure. I think they're doing pretty good. And he asked this question. He says, well, if they're doing pretty good, why don't you guys stay K-8 and make it your mission to make them salt and light in the public schools? Right? That would have been easy. But it's not what we should be doing. I went back and I looked up, okay, well, who was in eighth grade 4 years ago? They just graduated. Oh, Teddy Shim, National Merit Scholar going to Princeton. Well, who was the year before? Oh, you know, and I find these guys, we had guys from Princeton, Cornell, oh, amazing things, first in their class, second in their class, in these public schools around Green Bay. They're just dominating. A couple of the kids I taught in eighth grade who went on, I had one of them bring me a paper in their honors English class, and he showed it to me. He had 100% on it. And I looked at it, and I read it, and I go, well, this is it's a good paper, but, you know, if you were in eighth grade and you brought this to me, you'd probably get about a 93. And his response was this, yeah, I know, right? That's how we talk in Wisconsin, sorry. Yeah, I know. This kid knew he could put the bare minimum on to get 100% in his honors English class. And he knew it. He knew it. He's now a senior. Next year he's a senior. His mom has come and asked if there's any way possible her son could come part-time. Because he's dying. It's just, It's just not what it ought to be. So I'm convinced. I go back to the guy, my potential donor, and talk to him about it. And I said, here's the thing. I'm convinced not only can we provide a better education for the Teddy Shims and the Todd Mandiches, you know, the Princeton Cornell guys, than those schools did. And not only that, the vision that we have to producing godly leaders who can think and reason from a Christian worldview, a biblical worldview, is it happens in high school, not in eighth grade. And he was on board. And he gave us, you know, $5,000 or something. I was very excited about it. The next year, he gave us $10,000. Then we showed him our school. We actually finally got he and his wife to the school. And he just wrote us a check for $15,000. And he says, you can count on this every year. It was awesome. Awesome. Praise God. So true leadership, Al Moore said, starts with a purpose and not a plan. And I believe this is true. It starts with a purpose, not a plan. The purpose of our school is to produce godly leaders, and we're going to make sure that we do it. And it takes vision, it takes conviction to do this. Now, my board and I, these great friends, supportive guys that I had, my first year there, we spent most of our time fighting. But not in a bad way, not in a way in which I somehow thought they were against me. I really thought they were supporting me, and they did. They had my back. It's just that we disagreed at who gets to say what. My whole first year, I felt like I had to go and get permission to do anything. Basically, my understanding is that there's a standing no. And unless I convince the board, then they'll say yes. If there's money available. And that's just, I would rather quit and just do the paper route. It's horrible. I'm sitting there talking to them about what we're doing in 6 months, in a year, 2 years. Let's look at the big picture, and they're wanting to know what we spent last month. Like, who cares? Oh, sorry. Board members, sorry. That's your job. You're supposed to care. But in the big picture, I mean, really, okay, look, we went $20 over in our supplies. Okay, we'll go $20 less this month, I guess. Or here's $20. I don't care. It's look at what we're doing. Look at what we have to start early. My first year, I was trying to get a budget passed. They said, well, we don't work on it until, what do you mean you don't work on it until the spring? I got to hire teachers. This is crazy. We're like 6 months off. So we're fighting all the time. Fighting all the time. Our board meetings our scheduled board meetings were once a month. They lasted 4 to 6 hours. Plus, we met sometimes on Saturdays. It was horrible. Again, they're my brothers in Christ. I love them. One time we had to make this difficult decision in the middle of the year. Again, the school was not operating very professionally, you might say. We instituted facts. We're going to institute facts. Anyone do facts? Okay. We needed a mechanism to get tuition to us timely. The cash flow issue was horrible. We implemented it halfway through the year because we had to. In the middle of the year, Matt, some of you guys administrators are like, oh, this. But it was necessary. If we don't get the money on time, there's no money to pay teachers. And we had to tell them this. We had to tell the families this. So the board wanted me to send a letter to the parents saying, unless these things happen, the teachers won't be able to get paid. I'm like, going, okay. Like, I get that. But if I send a letter home, the teachers will hear this. And then they're all going to be going, what do you mean when I can get paid? I go, I can't do this. One of the board members says, we got it covered. The teachers will get paid. I will make sure that the teachers will get paid. I said, you don't understand. I can tell my teachers that time and time again, but it's going to be in the back of their head. And this week, we actually have our open house with our presentations this week. And they said, okay, so why don't you just wait till the weekend and then send it? Are you kidding me? So our open house with presentations is on Thursday. So on Wednesday, I went around to every teacher and showed them the letter and assured them that they'd get paid, that this has to go out, but they will get paid. There's been a guarantee you will be paid. I sent out the letter. The open house came. It was an amazing event. The teachers were fantastic. The kids are always fantastic. The kids were fantastic. Their Shirley grammar things wowed everyone. It was wonderful. And the presence and the peace there. I had parents coming to me going, I know so-and-so is struggling. I'd like to pay their tuition. It was wonderful. The board called me and I said, we got to meet on Saturday to talk about what happens if. What happens if. I go to them to meet with them on Saturday morning. Unbeknownst to me, every one of them had been fasting since Wednesday. And I was actually breaking fast with them. And I couldn't believe it. I go, I've pastored, and I've never had that before. That was an amazing thing. They were supportive. Here's the thing. They were all personally committed, willing to do whatever it took to succeed and for me to succeed. They were prayerfully guiding me. And it's amazing. I don't want to bring this up, but I'm 48, and I've worked a lot of jobs and a lot of things in ministry. And until I've been at Providence Academy, I've never felt that from a board or from a boss or however you want to put it. I've never done it. And it is an amazing feeling. After that, I thought, man, I'll crash through that brick wall for these guys. It's an amazing thing. So that ACCS conference, I was not at that following year. It was my 20th wedding anniversary, and we went to Hawaii, and because I'm poor, it was paid for by someone else, and we needed to use the timeshare at a certain time, and it just happened to coincide with the ACCS conference. I'm there with my wife, and I get a call from a board member. My cell phone goes off. I look at it, and my wife goes, oh, you're kidding me. On our vacation. And I go, let me just take it real quick. And these board members are at the ACCS conference, and they went to hear Phil Graybeal talk about board governance policy, and they called me to apologize to me. And they said, you are right. We shouldn't be micromanaging. We should be giving you this. And so we have, and we're going to bring this Phil Graybeal here to do a session. And I was like, great. Who's Phil Graybeal? What's board governance policy? I had no idea. He goes, can I just look on the internet for a little bit? When? And you know, my wife's like going, no. And so I had to. So the rest of the week, I'm like dying to find out what this whole thing is that we're going to implement. And anyways, thank God for my wife. She's so patient. But we turn to the board governance policy, and if you've not been through his session or considered it, I would urge you, and board members, I don't know, do you guys do board governance policy? Do you even know what it is? You're like, what is it? Basically, the board governance policy, the board members are, they declare the ends. This is what we want. They give me some boundaries and say, don't do this and don't do this, but all the means are at my discretion. You go for it. You can make the decisions. Instead of it always a no unless we say yes, it's a yes unless we say no. That is so amazing. So last year, our first year with board governance policy, we had one meeting a month, no extra meetings, and they lasted between 2 and 4 hours. This year, our second year of board governance policy, we meet every other month, and they last for about 2 hours. And it's so amazing, too, because I know what I'm accountable for. And I just have to do these monitoring. I have a couple monitoring sheets if you're interested in looking to see what one looks like. Basically, I have to demonstrate to them that I'm not crossing the bounds. And that's it. That's it. The rest is free to do. And you know how freeing that is? To only have to meet once a month, and the other months we have committee meetings. Things that are working towards the future. It's I highly recommend it. Highly recommend it. So they're personally committed. They're prayerfully guiding me, and they have these permissive protocols. And this to me, this to me is the key. I think without that relationship between myself and the board, and without this vision and conviction that we need to do this, I don't think it would happen. I really don't. So with that in place, well, what do you do? And that's the big question. What do you do? Well, I think the big thing is just simply that commitment to vision and to excellence. We believe that what we're doing is amazing. It is worthy of my time and my energy. And the teachers all believe the same thing. We believe this. And so what we want to make sure is that the community is seeing this as well. That the parents are seeing this. That the donors are seeing this. That we're committed to what our mission says. So the big questions in the vision is part is, what's the vision of your school stated in your charter? What is the vision of your school? Right? Mine is basically boiled down to that we're partnering with parents to build godly leaders who can impact the world for Christ. The rest of it is talks about classical and Christian methodology. But building godly leaders who can impact the world for Christ. And the question is, so for the last 12 years of our school's existence, have we been doing that? And the answer is no. The answer is no. Tom Garfield came out and visited our school back in before I became headmaster and kind of made some recommendations. And one of the things he pointed out to the board was, here's your vision. How is it being carried out? And the embarrassing thing is that board members didn't know what the vision was. It's somewhere. So we have a practice is that every time we meet together as a board or a parent-teacher fellowship, we read the vision. The vision is ever before our people. This is what we're about. Providence Academy is about partnering with parents to build godly leaders to impact the world for Christ. That's what we're about. And that's what we're heading towards. And so this is what we do. The other question to ask is, now, who's to benefit from a fulfilled vision? Now, think of that. If you were to follow your vision, who benefits from it? In ours, we understand it's not the kid. It's the world. It's the Church of Jesus Christ. Our vision is greater than just having a kid be able to get to a good college and have a good job. Whoopee. Yay! You can be an employee. Great, great vision. No, they are to impact the world for Christ. The beneficiaries of our vision is the world. It's the community. It's the church. Now, how can you as an administrator going to talk to donors in your community about, what we'd like you to do is take your funds, which could be used in any way you possibly can imagine, and I want you to give it to this private Christian school. So that we, who have, kids, many of them from families of means, can have a better education in the public schools, that goes over really well. Now, it doesn't, does it? What we need to understand is the beneficiaries of our vision, if we carry out our mission, is going to be the world. And getting parents to understand your child is at our school not so that they can be protected from the world, but that we're preparing them to impact the world. That's the vision. And if you're not interested in that, that's probably not a good place for you. The beneficiaries of our vision is the world. Then the question also comes, can that vision be fulfilled without the full Tribune? And our answer was clearly no. Not only did we weren't fulfilling our vision, it can't even be accomplished without that piece. So we had to have the rhetoric stage. The second part is that commitment to excellence.
When you don't have much money, and we didn't,
because we had such a small student body, it's really hard to portray excellence, isn't it? And what we needed to do is commit ourselves to excellence. If we want our children to not only receive excellence, but to produce excellence and be excellent, they ought to have it modeled, especially by us. Right? So we wanted to do this. We want to become excellent. We want to become who we say we are. So for me, as in my role as administrator, as headmaster, my two goals are to be able to say yes as often as I can, and saying no as often as I need. Okay, and by that I mean, by saying yes, it's really about hiring excellent people and then letting them go. Hiring excellent people. If you've ever read the book Good to Great, you know, good is really the enemy of great. You want to find great people, excellent people. Get them on the bus, I think, is how the author puts it. Get them on the bus first and then figure out what to do with them. And that's my philosophy, too. If I find someone and I want them at Providence Academy, I'll do what I can to get them there. And if it means figuring out what to do with them so that I can pay them, then I'm going to do it. I mean, like the current administration he's called it logic and rhetoric administrator because he's new to classical Christian education. We want some training before I give him the title principal. But he's an ordained PCA pastor. We've made him chaplain. So he received a call from Providence Academy. He's an excellent administrator. His undergraduate was in branding and marketing, and man, I want him. He's so detail-oriented, it's great, because I am not, as you probably have figured that out. And I need to surround myself with people like him. So I got him on board and paid him diddly for the first year, but he believed too in the vision, and he came along. And I like to say, do whatever I can to get him. Our front office was hard. It was manned basically by some moms in the school who were willing to do it. They were nice people. And they were very comforting when kids came into the office if they had a boo-boo. But what was being produced in our school was not excellent. It wasn't excellent at all. It was really bad. And there was no processes. It was really hard. So part of saying yes to the excellent is also saying no. And so some of the things, the transition you go through is firing people. If there's not excellence there, you've got to let it go. And the hardest, I got to tell you, the hardest thing ever is to fire volunteers. Firing volunteers is the hardest thing I've ever had to do at that school. We had volunteer tech people. And basically that means we'll get internet when they have time. And the school's on hold until they have time. We had to fire, again, administrative people to get excellence in. It's hard. I'm not going to get in case people listen to the tape. I'm not going to go off too much into that. But I made a mistake hiring a preschool teacher. We have preschool and junior kindergarten now. I'm not a big fan of it, but it's kind of a necessity in our market to have such things. But it wasn't working out. And the question is, we can make it through this year with her. That was the, is it good enough? And the reality was, no, it wasn't. It was not good. So I fired her in the middle of the year and had to hire and brought someone else in who was excellent. Those things are hard, but I'll tell you what, it makes an impact on parents when they see that you're committed to excellence. If you say you're committed to excellence and you're not showing it, they're not going to believe you in anything. Why would they send their kid there to high school that doesn't exist yet, right? So you have to make those decisions. midstream, we fired a teacher and brought a new one in, and it's worked out great. And that's just hard. So
the other part about saying no is junk.
You know, do you get the people who bring all this junk to you and go, I thought you were supposed to use this? Do you get that? And you know how hard it is to say no? For me, it's easy. I just say, no, we can't use that. Thank you. That's it, you know. My office administrator, on the other hand, you know, I said, what's this? Oh, so-and-so, they found this stuff at Goodwill and thought we could use it. Well, now it's sitting in the office. What are we going to do with that? We can't use it. Let's throw it in the recycle bin or whatever. But it's that thing. Our big transition that we're needing to do is our library. Our library over the years was just people giving us their old books. And so there's all these books, and we've got these great volunteers who've labeled them and made them, and it's just there, and it's like, but it's like they're not the books we want. So now we're saying, no, don't bring us your old books unless they're on this list. If they're on this list, we'd love them. If they're not on this list, you have to convince me. Convince me we should have this in the library. Convince me that this should be here. So this summer is kind of working through getting our list, amended and getting those books, purchasing, buying books rather than waiting for hand-me-downs and then tossing. Just toss all the stuff that's junk. We don't want junk. We want excellence. And the library reflects that. The other thing is saying no to parent suggestions. Parent suggestions. Parents have all sorts of suggestions, but they don't fit with the mission. So you say, that's not us. Saying no to families to apply. In the old days when we were desperate for students, it was very easy to bring in families because they have tuition dollars attached to them. But they're a pain and they never work. If you know that they won't fit in your school, don't admit them. Don't admit them. Your teachers will be very grateful. They'll be very grateful. So we say no to people more often than people will think. Our school has grown tremendously. I got it. What? This gets out of 10, 15? Yes. So part of my, there's no thing. I think for some reason in my head this whole time I thought I had an hour. And then I came here and I saw that I had 45 minutes. So I'm not even getting to the brains. Let me put it back to that last part, though. I'll just mention it. The branding and knowing yourself and your market, it's very helpful. Very helpful. We went through a branding process. Not before the ACCS started bringing in someone to talk about branding, we had someone who had gone through a branding process in their own business and recommended it. And so we had a gentleman in our school who paid for it, the entire thing. I think it cost like over $20,000 in our branding process, but that included things like our logos and other things. It was so worth that money, especially since I didn't have to raise it. But it really was worth the process because it really helped us to focus on who we really are and who our market really is and not waste money on things that's not our market, but to focus on that and to have a unified way of talking about our school to the public, not just for myself and the administrators, but also training parents how to talk about the school. It's been fantastic, and I think a lot of our growth can be attributed to our parents being able to explain the school. Finally, communicating with the right people. Really, it's your parents and your donors. Really need to, and it's ongoing. And I still have to remind myself that. Repeat over and over and over and over again. You know, the first year, because I was a rookie at this, I get a donation, I send a thank you note, and then forget about it. And it's like, oh yeah, maybe you can call them up again. They can donate next year. And it was dumb. And thank God for gracious people who can you know, put up with me. And then realize I need to be developing relationships with people and not just getting their money. But being able to communicate effectively about who we are to those people and finding them is crucial. All right. I think we're done. We're pretty close. Who has a correct time? Stephen? Stephen? 1 or 2 minutes. Anyone have a question? I'm here all week. If you want to hang out, I'd be happy to. Yes. Absolutely. Yeah, we have two. NAW Lutheran, but we're not really competing for Lutheran students, although we do have Lutherans coming to our school. And Bay City Christian School, which is, I would say, like a generic Christian school. They had some of the bells and whistles athletics that might be attractive, but we're growing and they're not.
So how many of your 8th grade graduates would have gone on to one of those 2 Christian high schools in your area?
Oh, there, I would say that in every class there'd maybe be 1 or 2 going to NAW Lutheran and the rest going to public schools.
And how many were in the
class? I don't know, like 4 or 5.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So, any other questions? Yeah, you're free to leave, by the way. We're done, but I can stay around, so, yeah. Sure. So, we got two parents who, well, let me back it up. My original plan was that the current sophomore class was going to be my first class. There are 7 students in that class. But we had 2 parents who said, well, what about our kids? And one of them, I don't know if I should, one of them I know is going to be a national merit finalist. There's no doubt. I taught at UWGB, University of Wisconsin-Green Bay. When she was in 8th grade, she was writing better papers than any student I ever saw at that school. She's amazing. And I thought, if I could keep her, I'm going to do whatever I can to keep her. So we've got 2 who are juniors next year. We've got the 7 who are sophomores. We've got a class of, I think, 6 in the 9th grade. And then as it moves on, it goes to like 10 and then 15. And it's growing. Yes. Yeah. They got to be crazy, though. Yeah. Yes. I sure do.
Here, I can kind of explain. So, I'm actually going to turn this off.
So there's basically these groups that have all together created various policies.